Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell, filling in this week for Dinah Jansen. We begin with a story from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie about Kingston City Council's decision to move forward with a controversial new development on Bath Road.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The decision to move forward with the development on Bath Road near Collins Creek has been delayed. Prior to Tuesday's meeting, environmental advocates in Kingston, including No Clear Cuts Kingston, were calling for council to delay the decision to move forward with this development, raising concerns with the impact on the surrounding forest and wildlife. The development proposal from developers Armitage Homes LTD and Arcadis and property owners Francis H. Day, Clark Day, and Robert R. Kennedy would include 390 dwelling units. When the motion came before council, Councillor Connie Glenn asked that the development located at 4085, 4091, and 4097 Bath Road be singled out for discussion, raising concerns regarding the environmental impact of the development.
Among my most grave concerns, though, were about cutting over 750 trees and the lack of serious consideration for the environmental impact that this will have. This council just signed on to the Montreal Biodiversity Pledge, and our strategic plan, in it, we committed to preserving our tree canopy and, moreover, to expanding it. And, you know, I'm a pragmatist. I understand that as we build, there's going to be the occasional tree that we are going to have to cut down. But this just seems a step too far.
In addition to environmental concerns, Councillor Glenn also pointed out the pressure this would put on the already congested roads in the area, as well as the affordability of the units proposed, calling it a sprawling development and clearly not affordable housing.
That's 309 houses, not 309 people, 309 households emptying onto a road that is already on a regular basis full of traffic coming to and from the city, particularly during rush hour. And the traffic report that was provided was conducted in January, during a quieter time, not during the tourist season, when there's going to be people coming in and out, not when the marina is going and the boat launch is going to be in use. And it's not a big space over there. I know what it takes to bring a boat into a water, and you require a lot of room. So I just couldn't fathom that there would be absolutely no impact. And maybe that impact isn't going to hit immediately, but the communities to the west of us are going to continue to expand, and that roadway is going to incur greater and greater levels of traffic. I struggled with allowing, in a time of a housing shortage and with municipal shortage of land, a sprawling development, in my opinion, clearly not affordable housing.
Councillor Glenn and Councillor Lisa Osanek were both opposed to the development at the Planning Committee meeting earlier this month, when a vote of 3-2 in support of zoning bylaw and official plan amendments for the development pushed it through to Council. Councillor Osanek put forward the motion to defer in order to allow more time for environmental studies and to look into options which would have less impact on the surrounding environment.
Does approving housing at all costs mean to destroy a natural heritage system and mature forest? 84% of this forest will be clear cut to just a mere 50 meters. Just the steep slope will be left with trees. That's it. This is not a forest of invasive species. The tree inventory, it shows that the forest is in good health. It contains native hardwood trees of significant ecological value. 42% of the trees are actually sugar maples. Black ash is present, and that's an endangered species at risk. We have 738 big trees at stake here. This development is a major encroachment into the forest.
When told it would take 4 to 8 months to reevaluate the site, Mayor Patterson expressed his concern with deferring the motion.
I'm just going to say this. That's totally unreasonable. 4 to 8 months. This is the sort of thing that gives municipalities a bad name when it comes to housing. This is why we see some of the messaging about how we can be blockages to housing. You know what? We are already past the time to make a decision on this.
Those in opposition to the deferral pointed out that taking more time to make this decision could also prompt the developers to bring the case to the Ontario Land Tribunal, taking the decision out of council's hands.
With that, I can't support the deferral because we basically just hand off any control over the entire process again, which we've been doing far too much lately. This is on us to sort our way through it somehow.
While council was divided between environmental stewardship and providing more housing, council voted 9-4 in favor of delaying the decision and having the project undergo a scaled environmental assessment.
Okay, my fellow councillors, I'm really sorry it's so hard to save a forest, but we have to try. Someone sent us a great line last night. We have to walk the talk.
I don't think that we can let it go on the way it is. And if we don't take a stand for the community and what we want to see this community look like, we'll be answerable to our children and our grandchildren moving forward.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC 101.9 FM for that story. Coming up next, a piece from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about Kingston City Council's decision to wind down the Sleeping Cabin program. The city is moving forward with plans to end aid provided to the Sleeping Cabins project run by Our Livable Solutions, or OLS, with city support. Kingston City Council voted in favor of the staff recommendations to relocate the cabins to Center 70 in May for one final season before ending support for the program entirely at the end of September. OLS is seeking out a way to continue the program independent of the city and have until the end of September to find privately owned land where the cabins can reside. If OLS successfully finds this land, which some delegates at the council meeting were optimistic about, the city will sell them to the organization for a nominal fee of $1. If the OLS cannot secure land, the cabins will be auctioned off with proceeds being reinvested into other housing initiatives. Several delegates at the meeting asked council to reconsider the wind-down plan, saying it was unrealistic and that the roughly $140,000 provided for the May through September operation of the cabin community won't be enough to cover staffing costs. OLS hires people with lived experience for these staff positions and says there's concerns that, in addition to the lack of adequate alternatives for the 17 residents, this opens up potential for 8 employees to backslide into homelessness. Crystal Wilson of OLS told council that the plan is not robust enough to protect residents or employees, and that while better options have been mentioned, they haven't been seen. Through a new partnership with the Community Foundation for Kingston and Area, OLS has been able to start administering charitable tax receipts for donations to the program. Council will be updated on July 1st on any proposals submitted by OLS to relocate the cabins permanently to privately owned land. Thank you to Owen Fullerton from YGK News for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI-FM, Ted Evans, about an internal recreation rate review for Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township Council approved recommendations outlined in an internal rate review from the Community and Customer Services Department. Recommendations include new rate categories, changes to non-resident fees, and the addition of capital improvement fees. Recreation and Facilities Manager Carrie Lamb explains why they did a rate review.
During the pandemic, fees were not increased. The focus was on adjusting operations to the changing needs of the pandemic. Post-pandemic, fees remain static. Our goal was to welcome people back to in-person programming and to facilities for rentals. The internal review was completed and detailed in that it addresses the rate categories, the rate strategy for rentals, programming, and capital improvement. Considered within the rate strategy is a balance of service utilization and the possibility of a decrease in service usage. That is important to consider through this whole thing. We want to make sure that everything we do is affordable, and we want to make sure that nobody is turned away. So it's important that we continue to make sure that we are welcoming everybody in our community to both our programs and our facilities.
Lamb explains the first of their recommendations.
Currently within our programming, there are a variety of age categories. The age category of youth, it's 15 to 24 year olds. This age category provides some challenges as it relates to how we program. Having 15 year olds and 24 year olds in programming, it's not something you normally do in the same program. It is a bit difficult to program that way, as well as it's difficult administratively. It is not something that is a norm in the industry. We are recommending that moving forward that a child and youth age category be created for 3 to 17 year olds, and that the adult age be changed to 18 to 54 year olds.
Lamb details the recommended rate categories.
Currently, when you look at our rate chart, it is very, I'll say, simplistic. It's adult, youth, meetings, and functions. It doesn't recognize the different types of customers who are using our facilities. So it could be adults, it could be non-residents, it could be our not-for-profit groups or our child groups, it could be township schools. So the proposal or the recommendation takes into consideration a more broader rate category and recognition of the types of groups that are going to be utilizing or are currently utilizing our facilities.
Lamb described how staff looked at non-resident fees for their next recommendation.
Another recommendation within the document is the 20% non-resident fee for rentals and for township programming. With still allowing the 72-hour advance booking opportunity for residents, that would remain.
Lamb notes how neighboring communities helped influence their recommendation on non-resident fees.
I've spoken with some staff from other municipalities that around the area, and they've indicated that they are beginning to review rates, which include consideration of a possible non-resident fee, specifically our neighbor to the east. So they are currently undergoing a rate review right now. Many of the surrounding and regional municipalities around us do not offer similar levels of recreation programming that we do, and that's why we're seeing that registration come to us because of what we offer and the quality of programming that we're offering.
Lamb details the recommendation regarding sports fields.
This is where there is no increase proposed. It is quite a high rate for our fields. Same with soccer. We've actually seen a decline in soccer use in our fields because, and I do believe part of it is our rates, where our youth rates are somewhat low in comparison. So what we're proposing is actually staying static in our adult lit rates and seeing our youth rate grow until we can get to the proper rate strategy that we're proposing. It's going to take a bit of time, but it's not something that we can just go and correct tonight. There has to be the proper growth, or it's going to impact our youth group too much. And our Loyalist Minor Ball organization has done a really good job of rebounding post-pandemic. Shane, who operates that or is the president of that group, has done an excellent job pulling that group together. Now we need to get our soccer groups to fall in line behind them.
Lamb describes the need for capital improvement fees.
At this time, we are not collecting, with the exception of a Zamboni recovery fee for the arena, we are not collecting any capital improvement fees for any of our rentals or our facilities. So when it comes time to renew our facilities or do any capital works, we don't have the reserves associated. We're turning to our annual budgets to do that, or we're looking for grant funding or alternative sources of funding. What we staff are recommending is that we look to add a capital improvement fee on all rentals. So whether it be a park, whether it be a rental of the hall, whether it be an arena or a sports field, it would be a one-time non-refundable fee charged on all rentals. It would replace the Zamboni recovery fee, which is currently $3.95 per hour. Fees collected would be transferred to reserves. So if it's, let's say $5,000 comes in to the parks reserve this year, or parks operating this year from those fees collected, it would go right to reserves. It doesn't offset operating at all. It's an in and an out. And what we're recommending is that it be a 10% CIF. Recognizing it's a new fee, we would recommend that we implement at 5%, grow annually by 1%, and then until we hit the 10%. So it will take time for us to grow it, but We're recommending that it's the 5% implementation, starting with the May 1st implementation this year.
Lamb explains why they chose a 10% increase for the fees on registered programs.
Any registered programs, so whether it be for a craft class at the Leisure Activity Center or a swim class, those fees are not actually built into the fee schedule. Those are priced based on the cost of instructor, materials and supplies, is there a facility rental applicable, and any other costs. So those are structured based on the actual cost for us to deliver those programs. So those are done separately. All the fees that are built into the actual schedule are based on like more of our drop-in fees. So things like public skating, parent and taught, shinny, those types of things, those are the fees that are in the schedule. Our arena fees have not increased since the 2019-2020 season. Fitness actually went down in 2021 coming out of COVID. Our goal was to attract more people back to in-person fitness and to introduce more people to our leisure and activity center and our programming. And there's been no changes since that time. And so at this point, we are recommending a 10% increase. And in reviewing the fees, it certainly keeps us within the region and in Eastern Ontario, well within an affordable area, but also doesn't put us at the highest and doesn't put us at the lowest. So we're comfortable with what we're recommending with that increase.
Lamb describes the proposed annual increases.
We want to make sure we're not in a position that in 4 or 5 years, we're back where we are today. We want to make sure that we're monitoring this properly. We will look at an annual increase that comes to council that would include a 2-year cycle. So our rates include 2 years worth of rates because we do get rental increases for further out than just 1 year. So we would be bringing an annual increase to include the next 2-year cycle. And then every 4 years, we are recommending that a more detailed review be done, whether it be internally and or through an external consultant, should council direct us to do that. It does need to be done. They do need to look at detailed analysis of current rates. Industry does change, the region does change, the township changes, and the township's changing quickly. Program and facility usage needs to be looked at, rate comparators, industry trends, and then the rate and pricing strategies also need to be reviewed. So this is something that should be done on at least a 4-year rotation, a more detailed review.
Lamb describes staff's other work and future plans.
Staff are still working on an affordable access to recreation policy. It is separate from this. We will be looking at that and bringing that forward to council within the next year. That will require some detailed community consultation and work with other agencies within the community. So as we move forward, we will be looking to bring that forward.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend shared his support for the recommendations from the rate review.
I really think this struck the right approach to the right kinds of sensitivities, like having an equity lens, but also being fiscally responsible. You know, as a corporate entity, we obviously have to look at our bottom lines, and you know, these things can often be in competition with each other. I really appreciate the well-researched, data-driven approach to the report and presentation as well. You know, looking at best practices around the province, looking at neighboring municipalities and what they're doing. I really also like, the proposed policy framework. I mean, I'm a policy wonk kind of guy, but, I really think that, for things like this, policy really is important, particularly when you have values like equity. And so it's going to ensure that these things are going to be in line with council's priorities and strategic vision for the township as a whole when it comes to things like asset management and capital investment, all of those things.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted his support for the recommendations.
The non-resident rate, that has got to be one of the biggest questions and concerns coming around recreation for the local that talked to me. So this is addressing that. So that's great. And also I like the idea of the CIP. We've done wonderful plans for asset management and everything else. So I think it's great now that we take that information and be able to utilize it for working in replacement costs and upgrade costs and things like that as well, all of the life cycle for the building.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for CJPE Prince Edward County, Brenda Little, about potential cost-cutting measures being put in place for Prince Edward County's Green Bin program.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
780 tons of food waste are managed through curbside pickup in Prince Edward County annually, with a cost of $250,000 to $300,000, half of it being disposal costs. It has been projected that the population in the county will increase by over 30,000 in the coming years, so tonnage will undoubtedly increase substantially. Compost has great benefits for reuse in domestic gardens as well as agricultural use and could possibly be a marketable material. However, it is suspected that large quantities of organics are still being placed in green bags going to landfill. The feasibility study outlines potential benefits of building and operating a facility, including reduced disposal costs and/or fixed future costs, reduced GHG emissions, save landfill space, and with the compost staying in the county, could reduce the use of chemical fertilizers, which could help the local nutrient cycle. The study included five possible locations across the county as potential sites for a facility. Environmental issues will be evaluated, such as air quality, which includes wind speed and direction, noise, soil types, and water influences. Other considerations will include existing infrastructure, access to water, electricity, and natural gas pipelines, and then there are the numerous permits required for a project of this caliber. Site evaluation will now take place, and it is the third step of a seven-phase process before going to council. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you very much to Brenda Little and Craig Foster from CJPE Prince Edward County for that story. Coming up next, we have the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region and CFRC's community concert and events calendar. We begin by looking at the weather for Thursday, April 25th. A beautiful sunny day, although still a little chilly with temperatures hovering around 8 degrees Celsius. Overnight temperatures will drop to a low of minus 1. Moving into Friday, April 26th, it will be a beautiful day here in the city of Kingston. Sunny with a high of 15 degrees, dropping down only to 6 degrees overnight. Moving into the weekend, however, that sunshine is replaced by gray clouds and a little bit of rain. Saturday, April 27th, it will be 16 degrees, but there is a 40% chance of precipitation throughout the day, dropping down only to 10 degrees overnight. Sunday, April 28th, we have one of the warmest days of the year thus far, 20 degrees, but cloudy, so expect a more humid day. Moving into Monday, April 29th, we're going to see a high of 19 degrees, and it is going to be cloudy, and then Tuesday, April 30th, the last day of the month, a high of 18 degrees and a low of 10. This concludes your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region, and now we move into CFRC's community concert and events calendar. Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. On Thursday, April 25th at 7:30 p.m., indie rock band Land of Talk is set to electrify the stage at the Kingston Broom Factory, one of the city's most storied and atmospheric venues. This live performance, part of their much-anticipated tour, is expected to be a highlight for indie music fans. Be sure to get your tickets on Eventbrite for $35. Navigating the vibrant city of Kingston just got a lot more exciting. The monthly Welcome to Kingston Networking Night is taking place on Thursday, April 25th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Tiernanog. Proudly hosted by Keys and the Kingston Economic Development Corporation, these gatherings take place on the last Thursday of every month at unique local venues. Don't miss out on this fantastic opportunity to weave your story into the fabric of Kingston's bustling network. Be sure to reserve your spot today on Eventbrite under Kingston Welcome Night. On Friday, April 26, come see Chris Jackson live at Blue Martini from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. You never know who will join Chris on stage, but be prepared to be entertained as he delivers some amazing rock and classic rock favorites. Come early to snag your seat and warm up for the show. Saturday, April 27th, the Kingston Public Market will be held at Springer Market Square, 216 Ontario Street, featuring local vendors. The market will be open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. and will remain open every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday until late fall. To view a full list of vendors, visit kingstonpublicmarket.ca/vendors. On Saturday, April 27th, join the Bored Bartender at Studio 330 at 339 Berry Street, anytime from 5 p.m. to midnight for a great night of games. Try something new or crack a classic. Bring friends and family or come meet folks. You can get tickets for $8.85 at theboardbartender.ca. This weekend is Limestone Race Weekend. Hosted by the Kingston Roadrunners Association, this premier event invites runners of all levels to experience the scenic beauty of downtown Kingston while participating in a range of races designed to suit every fitness level. Be sure to check out the events and register at tracky.com/event/Limestone Race Weekend. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students slash wider trans community members? Head over to the Athletics and Recreation Center at 283 Earl Street on Sunday, April 28th at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the Arc Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, visit gogalesgo.com. And rounding things out, if you're looking for some live music to finish off the week, be sure to see Jay Smith live at Caesar & Co. on Sunday, April 28th from 8 to 10 p.m. This concludes CFRC's community concert and events calendar for the week. This is Jesse Bell signing off and wishing you all nothing but the best. And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and event listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music, and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more local and regional news.
Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.